Eastern Illinois University's football team spent 2 years in the cellar of the Ohio Valley Conference until Dino Babers came in as head coach. He led the team to a conference title in his first year, and at 6-1 so far this season, the Panthers hope to go even further this year. How does Coach Babers do it? I'm Jim Meadows, and I'll ask him today on Focus. Later, we'll meet another type of coach. Sheldon Turner grew up in East St. Louis. You might have called him an at-risk youth, but he had the right family and community support to succeed, support he tries to pass along as a career counselor and coordinator of the Operation Hope program at the Champaign School District. Successful coaching coming up on Focus. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and later in the program, we'll talk to Sheldon Turner. He's a counselor in the Champaign School District who has gained kudos for his work with young people. But right now, we're talking to someone about his success with young people on the football field. The Eastern Illinois University Panthers are 6-1 for the season and undefeated in the Ohio Valley Conference. In fact, they just won their homecoming game over the weekend against Southeast Missouri State, 55-33. Not bad for a team that had back-to-back seasons of 2-9 just a few years ago. The team's fortunes changed when Eastern Illinois hired Dino Babers to be the new head football coach. Babers, who started his coaching career as an assistant coach at EIU, has brought the Panthers from last place to first with no apparent need for a rebuilding year. We'll try to figure out how that happened as we welcome Coach Dino Babers to Focus. Welcome to the program.
Jim, can I just carry you around and let you introduce me everywhere I go? That was unbelievable.
I thought you'd be getting a lot of this already.
No, sir. Good morning to you.
Well, good morning, and I invite folks to call in with your questions about Coach questions and comments for Coach Dino Babers at 1-800-222-9455. If you want to, if you have questions for Sheldon Turner, that'll be in the second half of the program. But the same phone number, 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. Our email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. And, well, Coach, well, let's tell me about the homecoming game. I take it things went pretty well.
Well, we had the fifth largest crowd in the history of the school. We were really excited about that. And, you know, as far as the game goes, it was we got off to a fast start and had a little comfortable lead, and then later on in the game they got some points off of us, which was a little disappointing. But overall, I thought the effort by the football team was fantastic. The parade, the homecoming, the student body, the faculty, the community of Charleston and Mattoon, along with Coles County, Effingham, Champaign. We had a lot of people from a lot of places here, and it was fantastic to see the atmosphere, the tailgating, and the camaraderie that was going on not only before the football game but well after the football game ended.
Does winning the homecoming game, is that special, whether or not you're up against a tough team or not?
Well, you know what? There's a lot of things that you've got the parade and everything that goes on in the morning. After the game, you've got dinners, alumni, people being inducted into the Hall of Fame. It makes for a very long day for Dr. President Perry, my boss, and the athletic director, Barbara Burke. So it's always better if they're doing that with a win tucked away instead of a loss.
Now, I'm reading that the Southeast Missouri State had had essentially come up with a special defense aimed at your wide receiver, Eric Laura. Is that a common thing to do?
Well, you know, Eric Laura was the leading receiver in the nation last year with 136 receptions in 1 year, breaking the Eastern Illinois OVC record. In fact, breaking the entire record. It's the most catches ever by a wide receiver in 1 year. And now he's coming back for his senior year. He's got numerous NFL football teams watching him, and he's a special guy. So sometimes people want to play their base defense. Sometimes they want to come up with a special defense. They came up for a special defense, and we picked it up within the first three plays of the game that they were doing that. And he came to the sideline, and I said, okay. I think it was after a touchdown run. I said, okay, they're playing this defense right here on you. I said, get ready for your buddies to have a hell of a day. And he just laughed, and he says, Coach, whatever it takes for us to get the win. And Fortunately, Keandre and Adam Drake both had exceptional days.
And Eric Laura had 8 catches and 131 yards, which I guess is a little below his average, but pretty good for an awful lot of people.
Really good, below his average, but more than excited, and he was really excited to see his teammates have a lot of success as well.
Coach Babers, you came in to coach a team that had been 2-9 for 2 seasons in a row, and in your first year you led them to a conference title in the first round of the NCAA tournament. What happened?
You know, I really believe that there's 2 things that happened. I think there's 3 things that happened. One, I think there were some good players here when I got here. There's no doubt about it. Coach Bob Spoo is a Hall of Fame coach. He had been here 25 years. He gave me my first full-time job in coaching. I've always thanked him for that. In fact, there's a picture of him up in my office. I told him if they hired me as the head football coach here, that Bob Spoo would go up into my office, and there he is right by my door. The second thing I think that was really important is that we had to just change the atmosphere. I think it wasn't an atmosphere conducive for winning, just based off of some of the things that were going on in the program that I think that are essential that you need to make sure you have if you're going to have a winning product on the football field. And then I think last and probably most importantly is we had to change the attitude. You know, when you've got 2-9 seasons, 2-9 seasons, and people are calling you losers, and they're not coming to the games, and you're not very good, and when people don't respect what you're doing at work, it affects you. And what I wanted to do was just influx this football team with positive energy, positive attitudes, telling them that they're not, that the actions they're doing does not make them losers. All they need to do is change their actions and start acting like winners. Told them it took 21 days to create a habit. We need to create some winning habits. They bought in. They drank the Kool-Aid. And I think with that mental attitude, that turnaround up in the head before it went down to the feet, I think that was the drastic change for this football team.
The mental attitude, you're saying that led to changes in performances, changes in how they approached the game?
Absolutely.
Well, it certainly worked here. And this was pretty much the same roster that had been in that last 2-9 season in 2011? Or were there some key additions?
Basically the same rosters. We brought in some new recruits. We did have some kids that played early, but minus 2 or 3 people, basically the same people.
Now, I watched an interview you did for the Ohio Valley Conference distributed, where you said your team now had to be careful about how they handled success, that they had to stay hungry, so to speak, to keep being a winning team. How do you think your players are adjusting to a second year of success?
Well, I really, right now at this point, I think they're handling it really well. Obviously, I believe we're ranked. I don't even know what we're ranked. I think the rankings come out later today. I don't know if we're 4, 3, 2. I have no idea. Those type of things, they're really not important to me. But I know the school and the community and everybody else gets excited about being ranked in the top 5. But to me, it's what we do inside that's important, how our family handles the success we've had. We like to call it our family, our La Familia, our Ohana. We owe it to each other inside the family to make sure that we're crossing our T's, we're dotting our I's, that we're doing everything that we can to make us better as an individual. And in becoming better as an individual, it makes us better as a team.
Now, that's something, what I'm hearing there is that you're really concerned about them, not just about player performance, but in some ways as people as well. If any of your players go to play professional football, they're probably not going to see the same sort of tender, loving care from their coaches. They're just going to be interested in performance.
I tell our guys all the time that the last time that you're going to enjoy football is right now. I have over 30 players in the National Football League, and I said that is a business. And your body is a company, and you're the CEO of your company. I said the last time that you're going to enjoy football, the last time you're going to walk to practice with your smile on the face is college football. And it's really important to me that we attack these guys 3-pronged. Not only do we want to attack them academically because they're a student first, and we want to attack them athletically because we need to be good on the football field or they're going to hire someone else to be the coach, and I like being the coach here. And third, that we want to attack them spiritually. And some people are further along in their spiritual beliefs than others. But what we want to do is we want to incubate. We want to put the seed in the ground. We want to put the fertilizer on there. And that thing may not sprout while it's here with us, but it's going to sprout someday. It's going to sprout later on. And once it gets watered, they're going to come back here, and they're going to be excited about our three-pronged attack on how we really want to make them better as a person, a better father, a better husband, a better son. And if they don't make it in college football, they're going to still have positive influences in any community that they choose to live in.
This is your first position as a head coach. You had been an assistant coach in a lot of different schools over the last quarter century. In the programs that you saw, the successful ones, did you see approaches like that?
In some of them I did. I mean, there's a lot of ways. As coaches, we always say there's a lot of ways to win a football game, and there's a lot of ways to lead a football team. The thing that I wanted to do is I've been around people who have been extremely successful doing positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement. I just choose to do it from a positive realm. I want to be as positive as I can with the players. I want to be completely honest with them. What we like to say in our program is we live in a black and white world and there is no gray. We understand that there's gray out there, but we don't want a lot of gray in our program. So we try to put a light on things. We speak the truth, and we know that sometimes the truth can hurt, but we're speaking the truth so we can have a change in a habit or a performance and be a lot happier about the outcome. And I think that light of truth, that pureness that we try to operate in, is what's one of the things that brings us so much closer together as a family on this football team.
And is that an approach that you've always gravitated to, or is that something that you've come to develop over your career?
You know, it is something that I've gravitated to. A lot of people have had a major influence in my beliefs and the way I go about doing things. One of my latest people that I've worked with that's had the biggest influence on me has been Art Briles from Baylor University. He deals in a positive atmosphere. He wants those kids lifted and not broken down. And I think that has perpetuated through me, and I've tried to carry that through to our football team here.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. The subject is successful coaching, whether it's coaching a college football team or coaching young people preparing for college and a career. In the second half of the program, we'll talk with Sheldon Turner. He's a career guidance counselor and a coordinator of the Operation Hope program for the Champaign School District. My guest this half hour is Eastern Illinois University head football coach Dino Babers, and your questions and comments are welcome. Toll-free at 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. Email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. You can send questions to us at Twitter or Facebook at Focus580. Coach, you said in an interview at the start of the season that you didn't think any other school had a tougher opening five games than the Eastern Illinois Panthers. And your team went on to win four of those five games. You lost to NIU. Were those games as tough as you expected?
There's no doubt. All those contests were extremely physical. We lost a starter in every game. We're just now starting to get the back, the starter that we got hurt in the first game when we played San Diego State out in San Diego and was lucky enough to come away with a win in that game. So we've really been depleting our ranks, so to speak. We've been playing every week. We've added a backup into the starting lineup, and we've lost a starter. We're trying. I think last week was the first week that we didn't get anybody hurt, although we had a lot of bumps and bruises, and we're starting to get those young men back. They've been like on 3- and 4-week injuries, and we're starting to get those young men back. It was the most difficult schedule I've ever seen. The way they handled it, the mental toughness through it, the physical pain that they had to go through, and then coming just a hair short of going undefeated. I'm so proud of these guys. It's one of the greatest accomplishments I've ever been around in football, and I've been a college football coach for over a quarter of a century.
Now, you have a tough opponent coming up this weekend in Tennessee State, I gather.
Tennessee State will be the best team that we've played so far in our conference. It's not even close. These guys are undefeated. They're nationally ranked, a little bit lower than us. Rod Reed, their coach, is an exceptional coach. We've got to go down and play in Tennessee Titans Stadium. They moved the game to an NFL stadium. It's their homecoming. They've got this dynamic marching band that's going to play for an extended period of time over halftime. It's going to be a full house. It's going to be a heck of an atmosphere. I was telling the guys on Sunday that, you know, this is the game. These are the type of games that your coaches wish they could play one more game, but we're too old to do. They're so lucky. It's going to be so exciting, and they deserve it. They've handled their business. They're undefeated in conference, and now their reward is an opportunity to play in a big-time game in a big-time venue that not only has local and not only has local attention, but it'll have national attention. The person that wins this game will be known nationally as a major player in what's to come at the playoffs in the second half of the season.
Your team won the its Mid-America Classic with Illinois State last month, and that, I understand, is just a longtime rivalry with the Redbirds there. Was winning that particular game important psychologically for your players?
I think it was, and there's a lot of history in that game. The head football coach there, Brock Speck, a dear friend of mine, him and I actually started coaching together here in 1987 at Eastern Illinois. We were on the same staff. Very good friends, him and his wife and my wife. And we played them last year, and they beat us in double overtime. So regardless of all the other stuff, it was great to finally get a evening win against my buddy with our football team. But it's a game that's been played for over 100 years. And really, traditionally, whoever's won that game between Eastern Illinois and Illinois State has normally gone and had a lot of success in their conference. So it's kind of a gauge of where your football team is at early, based off of a lot of kids that know each other, with most of our teams being from the Chicago and the St. Louis area.
I'm wondering what it's like also when you're playing against a coach that you know and you've worked with. If nothing else, the two of you must know stuff about each other that other coaches would know against their opponents.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. I was as nervous as a wreck, and I was sitting in my car the day before the game going over my notes, and I see Coach Spack and his wife Amy. They were actually taking a morning walk before the game, and their hotel was very close to our stadium, and they're walking through the parking lot, actually going to the old house that they used to live in 1987. And they're walking through the parking lot, and the only people in the parking lot is my car with me in the car and them walking across the parking lot. And I rolled down the window, and I just, without even saying their name, I said, you know, when you're walking through a parking lot and you're trying to be inconspicuous, I said, you've got to make sure that the one person that can recognize you in the entire community is not sitting in their car studying their notes. And they just broke out into laughter, and we got to exchange some pleasantries before the game, which was really cool, because we really do enjoy each other. And then, of course, once the game starts and the pregame stuff, and my football team's looking at me and his football team's looking at him, you don't want a whole bunch of hugging going on in the middle of the field between two old men. So it worked out. It was all great. And by the grace of God, we got to get them this year, and it's all even. But there's no doubt I know they'll be ready for us next year.
I'm wondering, this change of subject here. We had done some discussions here at WILL. We ran a Frontline documentary from PBS looking at the issues of concussions in the NFL. We did our own program looking at changes at how high school coaches and officials have handled concussion issues at that level of the game. How have things changed over the years in college football as to how you handle players who may have suffered concussions and how you teach and drill players to reduce the risk of concussions?
Well, it's all changed. I mean, the football that I played and the football that you know that growing up back in the 70s and the 80s is totally different. I think that people have always taught tackling with their head back, their head up, you know, not to drop your head because of the spinal cord injuries that can happen when you drop your head and you're trying to use your head as a ramming object when your neck is in between your head and your body. That's not conducive. That's not very smart. But the striking of the head has really changed, and the officials are really on top of it. We've had players that had to sit out this year on our football team because of helmet-to-helmet contact on a play at Northern Illinois, where if that would have been if that play was done when I played football, everybody would have been jumping up and down, celebrating and giving him a helmet sticker. And now it's a 15-yard penalty, and the young man had to sit out half a football game. So the rules have definitely changed, and really I think they've been changed for the better. I think this is a great game. I think it's a fantastic game. I think it's a physical game, which is the reason why it's the number one game in the United States of America, is because it is so physical. And to take away some of that physicality so that these young men can not only have a great experience with the game, but a normal life after the game, I think is awesome. And I think kudos for the people to have this in place, and hopefully it'll quickly run through pro football, college football, high school football, and peewee football, so that we can eliminate these injuries and eliminate so many concussions.
So you're not seeing much resistance to from people to think, well, this isn't really the way to play the game. We should be playing it like it was played a few years back.
You know, I think that the statement that you just said has been made, but when it comes to resistance, I mean, the one reason you play football is to win the game. And if they're going to throw a 15-yard penalty on something every single time you do it, you're going to have a hard time winning the game. So it's not about the resistance. They've already changed the rules on us. They're already implementing the rules. So if we want to win, then we've got to abide by the rules. So we'll make sure we'll get that taught. When it happens, it's a happening. It's an accident. It's not something that's deliberate. Our guy will pay the penalty, and we'll move on. And eventually, because of that, I think it'll slowly weed itself out of the game.
Just got an email in from an educational psychology professor here at the U of I, actually, and he was asking more about what you meant by the use of the word spirituality in terms of the things you were encouraging among your players.
Well, we obviously, you can't talk religion, you can't talk politics. Everybody throws their head, you know, everybody gets excited about that stuff. Mm-hmm. Those are the objects you can't talk about. But we want to make sure that everybody's three-pronged in their experience of that. I mean, we have chapel service during the week, which is obviously optional. We have things that we do before games and after games that are optional. We just want to make sure that these young men have everything open to them, and anything that they are willing and want to explore, it is available to them.
Are there options for spirituality? Can a person develop a spiritual side that's important to their growth outside of a traditional organized religion, do you think?
Oh, I don't even know if I've got the background or the knowledge to even speak on that. There's probably somebody at the U of I that can answer that question better than I can.
Okay. One thing that's come up, if you keep on doing this well, if you continue to be head coach on successful seasons, other schools are likely to come calling for you. Do you have long-range goals in your coaching career that include moving up to a bigger football school, say, once your contract at EIU is up?
You know, people like to talk about the money and moving up and your personal goals. I mean, when I came to Eastern, I took a major financial pay cut, a major financial pay cut. It wasn't about the money. It was about having an opportunity, instead of leading 10 and 12 men in a position group, an opportunity to lead 100 men. And that's what's so exciting about me. The next job I want is the job that I have. If I can just be happy at the job that I have and my employers are happy with the job that I'm doing, then I'm excited. I mean, the last guy I replaced, when I worked here, I said this would be a heck of a job to be the head football coach. If this job ever opens up, then I want to be the head football coach at Eastern Illinois University. Well, it didn't open up for 25 years because the same man had the job. So if I'm lucky enough to stay here 25 years and they still want me, I think that would be a blessing in itself.
I'm wondering, you know, in terms of stepping up, I was thinking of what the future for the players are. I imagine, you know, on average in any football team at your level, a certain amount of your players are going to go over to play some sort of professional ball, and the rest won't for whatever reason. What happens as far as life after college football is concerned for your team?
Well, I think the coolest thing that happens is you need to make sure you get your college degree, which is something that we emphasize all the time. And when you're at Eastern Illinois, obviously your college degree carries a lot of weight. With that college degree and the camaraderie and the competitiveness that you had on the football field, you know, obviously you hope that carries over into whatever job or career you decide to do, and then you always have the – the camaraderie or the fellowship of that football team coming back and joining hands and talking about old memories, whether it's at a homecoming game or something to that sort. I think any time that you're a member of an association, of a fraternity, of a sorority, of a club, and I think that that thing far outreaches after your college experience of people that you're going to be able to lean on, go back on, and even help you professionally and personally in your career. So to me, there's nothing more special than being a member of a football team and having that fellowship throughout your life.
And are do you have any contact? Well, for instance, you played college football back in the day.
Absolutely, yes, sir.
Where did you play at?
I played at the University of Hawaii.
Okay. Are you in touch with any of your old co-players from back then?
Absolutely. I spoke with my college roommate just yesterday, and we've been in contact with each other. Oh, my goodness. Wow, that's over 30 years. His kids call me uncle, and my kids call him uncle. Now, my kids always ask, now, why do we call him uncle? He's not really related to us. Just call him uncle. So those guys are with you forever. I mean, it's just like being a part of a military unit, not to say that football is like military, because obviously that's life and death, and there's nothing more serious or more special than serving your country. But, I mean, that fellowship is strong, and it stays with the football player throughout his life and forevermore. You're always related to that family.
Coach Babers, you're African-American. There seem to be more African-American head coaches in college football today than there have been for a long time. Do you feel opportunities are opening up now for black coaches in ways that they were not before?
Well, I mean, yes, I think there is. I also think that when I came into the profession in 1984 was the first time that I started coaching, I just think that the numbers of African Americans have increased as well. So there wasn't as many as there is. So as the pool grows, I think there's more talent to the pool, and obviously more to choose from. I don't like to get into the race part of it, because I would like to think that I was hired at Eastern Illinois because I was the best candidate for the job. My resume was long. It was extensive, and coming down and dropping to this level with the experience I had, I would hope that they would think that I could have had success here, or the type of success that I did have here.
I also wanted to ask you, I read the profile of you in the News Gazette from the other day. Seen any good movies recently? I understand you like to watch a lot of them.
You know, I'm sitting here right now at my desk, and I'm thinking about the movie list for our football players for the trip down to Tennessee State. One thing that I've loved movies. I watch good and bad movies. To answer your question, first of all, I haven't been to the I call it the movie house. That's how old I am. I haven't been to the movie house in a while during the football season. But what I've been doing is I wanted to re-educate our football team on all the great old movies. So I'm sitting here looking at my list and thinking of old movies that we're going to show the team coming down and coming back. Now, they know my MO. I'm going to get one, for lack of a better term, a guy movie, a Western or something to do with a little bit of violence, and then I'm going to have one movie with laughter. And the buses have to rotate these movies, so eventually, the football team sees all the movies that we've had out. Now, if you really got time, I'll read you the list of the movies they've seen so far. Are you ready? I'll go quickly.
Quick.
Okay. Good Morning Vietnam, Long Kiss Goodnight, Troy, Tombstone, Heat, Blues Brothers, The Purge, Iron Man 3, Hangover 3. Meet the Fockers, Airplane, Tommy Boy, and Bull Durham.
I was waiting for, is there a football movie in there anywhere?
You know, the football movie's got to be a special football movie for me to show it. I'm waiting for 42 to come out so I can show them 42.
Okay, for 42 is one you'd recommend.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Coach Dino Babers, I really want to thank you for coming on Focus today.
Thank you so much, Jim. This has been an honor.
Coach Dino Babers is the head football coach for the Eastern Illinois University Panthers, currently 6-1, and they have a big game coming up against Tennessee this weekend. Best of luck on Saturday's game. And we'll be back in a moment with our next guest, Sheldon Turner. This is Focus on WYLL. We're back on Focus on WYLL. I'm Jim Meadows, and my guest for this second half of the program is Sheldon Turner. Sheldon's a career placement advisor working with teens at the Champaign School District. He also plays a big role in Operation Hope. That's the multi-government venture that's trying to make streets safer in the Garden Hills area and other parts of Champaign. Sheldon's work has earned him this year's Man of the Year citation on the 40 Under 40 list that's put out by Central Illinois Business Magazine. He's nominated for the citation. Teacher Melissa Appleby says he can de-escalate a conflict, teach a kid to write a resume, and motivate a struggling middle schooler within a five-minute window and make it look like he's not working. Sheldon, welcome to Focus.
Glad to be here.
How many years have you been with Unit 4?
This has been about 5 years now.
Okay. You've been working in other school districts before then?
This first one.
Right. This is right out of the box for you.
Right out of the box.
Now, I'm not sure, but let's see. You grew up in, what was it, East St. Louis?
Yes.
Okay. Just from the area you grew up, the fact that you lost your father when you were young, some people might have labeled you as an at-risk kid. That's
yes.
a sort of
yes.
A piece of jargon that gets... that gets used a lot these days in talking in education. What does that label mean to you?
Well, with the program Operation Hope, I feel that I am one of those Operation Hope students, even now. At risk, it means that we have opportunities to go either way. Although if we are motivated by the right people and have the right mentors in place and programs in place to keep students in the right direction, we find ourselves on the successful side of life. So.
Is that how you feel that you came out okay essentially?
Yes, I did.
Okay, yeah. It's just that you had a good support system between
mm-hmm.
family and everything else.
Yes, I did.
What was everything else besides your family? What helped you growing up?
Church. My mom believed in taking us to church and making us have family time together. I had good friends that believed in being successful. I also had negative friends on the other side that also would help us, the ones that could be, look like that we could be successful. Even the negative friends would steer us in the right direction and tell us, no, we don't need to be going that way.
Interesting. Yeah. The negative friends, they use that phrase, realize the difference between where they were and where they thought you could be.
Exactly.
You work with kids as early as eighth grade and making career choices?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I know the idea when I was in eighth grade of making a career choice filled me with dread, but what sort of challenges do you face working with kids at that stage?
Well, many of them come with no idea what they would like to do after high school or for careers. And so what we do is we sit down and we give them surveys. We kind of talk to them about passions, the different things that they like to do. Some kids like to cook, and then we realize that that's actually a passion that they can use when they get out of high school or for careers when they become family-oriented and things. So we sit down and we kind of touch bases with them and kind of draw out that passion that they may have.
And it sounds like one thing you have to do if you find a kid with a passion is guide them in the thinking about that in terms of what they have to do to be able to do that for a living.
Right.
And how it might be worth it, say, working hard at whatever courses they choose in high school and so forth.
Yes.
And is that a new concept for kids at that stage?
I think it can be. Many times the students, they are involved in so many different types of things. This technology world, the way it is now, a lot of them are very crafty in some of the technical skills that they have. And so even with those kids as crafty and technical skills, we kind of steer them in towards the trades and possibly being doing some technical things when they get into high school and out of high school.
Okay. I did want to mention that your questions and comments are welcome here on Focus. If you have something to ask Sheldon Turner, our phone number, toll-free, is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu when we're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus 580. You talk about getting kids going after their passion, and I can imagine at some level, with some kids, you may come up against the question, which is more important, going after a career you love or after a career that you think you can get a good job in?
Yeah. One of the major questions that we ask students is, do you know the difference between a job and a career? Now, when we ask that question, a lot of times it's around this time of the year when they're trying to get jobs for holidays, to get extra money to buy gifts and things like that, which is fine. So we ask them, and a lot of them will tell me, you know, well, Mr. Turner, I would like to make a lot of money. Okay, would you like to make a lot of money and be happy with a lot of money, or would you like to be in something that you're passionate about and love it, make some good money, but be happy at the end of the day? And most of them, once we get them to understand what that is, they seem to want to be in that passion, being involved in something that they love.
That sounds like just a challenge going with teenage attention spans in order to start making long-range goals and start thinking about not next year or a couple of years, but actually 10 or 20 years down the road.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, even so with getting jobs today, to make the best of that job, we make sure that they find something that they really like or enjoy doing with the job so that they won't just go in and lose out on some of the things that they can learn to use after they are out of high school.
What preconceptions on the part of the kids do you run up against that you have to grapple with? Do they just have automatic notions that won't work in real life and what they think their future is going to be like?
Well, of course, athletics, playing basketball and football. A lot of them, I want to think big. You know, I want to go to the NFL. I want to go to the NBA. Then we have some that's involved in music. They want to make a lot of money in the music world. And so we always tell them, hey, there's a big chance that you might not make all that money you want to make. Can you think of something or try something that you know you will definitely be able to make some money with? And that's education. Make sure that you're furthering your education and keep that as your priority.
Mm-hmm. Do some of them get steered? Is it realistic to steer some of these kids into maybe jobs that are part of the music industry or the sports or the business of sports instead of just being the person there in the spotlight?
Oh yeah, it is. And again, that's when we just sit down with them and give them ideas about, you know, these are the good things about this passion or this job, and these are some of the bad things about this passion or your job. Find the good out of it.
We've been talking about ideas that kids have, but what about, do you ever run into any notions that adults have, whether it's the people that you work with or even potential employers that you think don't really match reality as to what the potential for these kids are?
Oh, all the time. Oftentimes we have workshops with adults when they come in and they speak to the students. And a lot of them, I tell them, you know, these are some of the things that help them and these are the things that they're struggling with now. And then that kind of helped them figure out what it is they want to do as well. We also work with some of the student parents. We're getting them figuring out, you know, some of their passions, because some of them don't have their passions as well and are dreams that they like to fulfill and be successful with.
Mm-hmm. Is that often the case that you work with in terms of working with, say, career or college planning, that the parents really should be a part of that?
Yeah, definitely. Most of the parents are very supportive of what we're doing, and they love being a part of it. They're actually able to sit down with their child to go over the financial aid part, to go over, you know, some of the college visits that we take. Some of the parents that come with us with those, thinking of some of the classes that the students may take that, you know, kind of the parents may not have taken them, and they want the kids to get exposure to them and experience in some of those classes. So it works out great with the parents as well.
Okay. There are challenges, whether it's they haven't really thought about these things in the past, or perhaps they're really busy if you have parents who are working multiple jobs, things like that. How do you work things out?
Well, emails are good ways of getting contact with parents. And then we have events during some of the months. We have events during holidays. We have events where we invite the parents out. We send them letters to kind of get them to understanding what we got going on. And a lot of the students that just go home and just kind of share with them the experience that they had with Operation Hope, some of the things that we do. And then that feedback will get back to us from the parents, and they'll thank us when we're out and about. So I know it's getting to the parents, and I know most of the parents are very happy about having their children in programs like this.
You know, I'm wondering, your 5 years doing this work has pretty much coincided with a recession and a slow recovery from that recession. Mm-hmm. And I guess the Champaign-Urbana area isn't the worst hit of areas by this, but it was certainly hit. Mm-hmm. How does that affect the sort of work you're doing when you're trying to find ways that that the kids you work with can find the financing from college or get onto a career track?
By keeping their minds busy with thinking of their passions and looking into more things with education and trying to find ways to incorporate some of the things that they are learning. I think when they're sitting idle with nothing to do, or when they're out trying to find jobs and don't have, and no one's hiring, when we sit down and kind of help them put together resumes and look at building portfolios, that gives them motivation to, hey, one day, you know, the job will come, or one day the things will get better in the world with jobs and things like that. So keeping their minds focused on being successful, that kind of help during the times when there's nothing going on.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and I'm talking to Sheldon Turner. He's a high school career counselor with the Champaign Unit 4 School District, just named Man of the Year as part of Central Illinois Business Magazine's annual 40 Under 40 Awards. You can call us with your questions and comments at 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL, or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Another part of the work that you've been doing is with the Operation Hope program, and I'm wondering if you can just tell me a little bit about Operation Hope and how it got started.
Building hope for the future is our motto, and that's what we're doing with the students. We're making sure that they have opportunities to do things that ordinarily students wouldn't have the opportunity at this level to do. Many of the students are what we deem as a bubble or at-risk youth in some of the different areas here in Champaign. We work with them with getting them exposed to colleges, college campuses, getting them experience on different jobs, building an educational system where they can have something sustainable to make them successful in this world. And we engage them in things with their future that they hold, things that they may have and hold for them for the future. And so we work with 100 students, and we also talk to many, many more. And we have a wait list of many more students who would like to get in the program. And this program is very, very successful. We continue to have our students graduate and get them into colleges and get them into career things. We also part of the Summer Youth Employment Program, where our students work in the summertime.
Okay, and summer youth, what sort of summer jobs are available through that?
Well, we have a whole lot of different jobs. We've teamed up with the Park District, Champaign Park District. We've had jobs with different, Regal Laboratory, who does dentist things here. We've had students at U of I that work at U of I. Just a whole lot of different partners in the community that have opened up jobs and opportunities for our kids to work.
So these are programs, and Operation Hope in general, does this go beyond just the school day and the school building?
Yeah. Well, after school, definitely Operation Hope. We have students that go into tutoring. And then the ones that work or have jobs when they're not at school, we kind of be a supporting system for them if they have issues on their jobs. We're always here for them. And so in the summertime, when school is not in, we're doing things with them, whether it's workshops to build character or them working in the Summer Youth Employment Program.
What sort of issues come up? And I was just wondering, have you ever Have you ever had to deal with what was really a crisis situation with your kids?
Yeah, some of the kids, the first time on a job, they have to learn how to respect their supervisors like we do. We teach them how to be on time. Being on time is something that they may struggle with at times. We teach them just how to handle conflict, anger management skills, things like that when they find themselves overwhelmed with different employees or even customers on the job. So we'll sit down with them and kind of give them little tidbits that help them understand which way to go to keep their jobs. So.
Okay, just learning for the first time what a job environment is like.
That's exactly what they do.
Okay. Yeah. How much success do you feel you're seeing out there? Is there more that you want to do? Are there more resources that you feel you would need?
I think we're pretty successful with the kids that we do touch, but there are also a lot more students out there and parents that may need some support. I would like to see the program expand even into the Urbana area as well as in the state of Illinois. I mean, Operation Hope could be very beneficial for a lot of different school systems and a lot of different communities. And so there are so many different lives that we can touch. We're only allowed a certain amount right now, but I'm sure in the future it will expand into even bigger.
And the program you do, certainly the program you're doing with the other local governments, they're targeting specific areas of town.
Yes.
I think Garden Hills was one of them. Where else
Yes.
are you dealing now?
Bristol Park, Beardsley is another area.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are going into different areas around Central and Centennial high schools.
Okay. How do you measure effectiveness or success when it comes to programs like Operation Hope? Besides just, you know, you can see success in individuals and you can feel good about that, but do you know if you're making difference with enough people to say that you're successful overall?
Yeah, when I look at the number of 37, we had 37 seniors last year that actually started in the program when they were freshmen. All 37 of them graduated. All 37 of them were either accepted into college or had the opportunity to go to college. I think that is a huge number of success because, you know, that it takes a lot to not only graduate from high school, even though that's what they're supposed to be doing, but it's also huge when you see them going into college and actually see them walking on the campuses.
Okay, that's the first class, those 37?
That would have been the first class that started with the Operation Hope program.
How many kids have gone into the program as freshmen in successive years?
Oh, my God. I mean, this is hundreds. I mean, we've had our caseload started with 40, but it has expanded. And so, there's been a lot of students been successfully touched by this program.
Okay, so it's you see something that's really growing. You mentioned you'd like to see it do something with Urbana. Is there any communication with the Urbana School District?
Not yet, but I'm sure that will happen one day.
Okay.
Looking forward to it.
I understand you also do some work as officiating basketball
in
middle and high school games.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that work. Did you ever play basketball yourself?
Yes, I loved playing basketball. One of the good things about being a basketball official is the fact that this is one of the passions that I found out on my own. No one had to actually tell me, hey, Sheldon, this is a good thing for you to do. But once I started doing it, I found out that it was something that I really enjoyed doing. Played with a little bit when I was in high school doing some intramural basketball games, but once I actually started doing the officiating thing, I love it.
It must be different from playing as well. First of all, you can't take sides.
Right, can't take sides, but the environment and being able to kind of teach as we go along with some of the different things that some of the players don't really get understanding of, we kind of help them grow into better basketball players by using our discipline on the court.
Okay, yeah. even though that may give you a few dirty looks from some
dirty
players
looks,
who don't get their way.
When you get dirty looks, that means that you're making the right call.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you're a Michigan fan.
Yep.
Is that something that, because at least I know walking around on campus, I could see what some Illini fans think about Michigan. Did you get any grief being a Michigan fan?
Right. When I first moved here, I used to wear a lot of Michigan stuff. I don't wear as much now, but I did. And, you know, I think it was – I never really got any problems with that. But, hey, we're still all in the same conference, and we all working to win a game. So.
Do you follow them both in football and basketball?
Yes, I do.
How are they doing in football right now?
They're managing. Okay. Not as good as I would like them to do.
But they're still in there. They're still in there plugging away.
Yeah, plugging away.
As I guess Illinois is as well. Sheldon Turner, thank you very much for coming on Focus today. And congratulations on the Man of the Year Award from the Central Illinois Business Magazine 40 Under 40 citations.
Thanks. It's been a privilege to be here and been a privilege to work with everyone and look forward to more future opportunities.
Okay. And our thanks to Eastern Illinois University head football coach Dino Babers, who appeared with me on the program earlier. We welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website. You can go to it directly at will.illinois.edu/focus. We're likely the first result in your search engine under WILO Focus. Today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft is our technical director. Sari Lesk is our intern, helping with production and research. Tuesday on Focus, there's no question the game of baseball has changed substantially over the course of the 20th century. Coming up tomorrow on Focus, guest host Jeff Bossert talks with Daniel Gilbert about his new book, Expanding the Strike Zone, Baseball in the Age of Free Agency. It explores the way that the labor history of Major League Baseball has shaped the game. That'll be coming up on Tuesday's Focus. Remember, Focus is live each weekday morning at 10 with a replay at 8 p.m. You can hear us over the air on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WILL.